Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Bears win! Tony, let's go!
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station. Anthony Herron.
All we got to do is do our job and punch him in the mouth every single play. Yeah.
Football insider for 670 The Score.
We do what we do. We drive all game long.
And Fox 32.
The majority of folks here in my life do pronounce it Herron. Even like my pops, who he should know how our last name is pronounced.
And the Pac-12.
How many jobs you got?
One.
One job.
And Big Ten Sirius XM.
Whole lot of Herron out there.
Anthony Herron talking ball with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. It is a built for tough Bears Monday here on The Score, even though it's a Friday, because the Bears played yesterday. And I know it's confusing, but it is a built Bears tough Monday on a Friday. Which means that we have the opportunity to talk with our buddy Anthony Herron, who joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. You know Anthony, you love him. He's on Fox 32. He's on their postgame show. He works for Big Ten XM Sirius, Channel 372. He's got 100 jobs, and one of them is to talk Bears with me after the Bears play. All right, Anthony. The Bears are now 6-6. They win against the Lions. The first thing that I want to talk to you about is something that we discussed last week. Why is Matt Patricia insistent upon playing man against a quarterback who has now shown him in three games that he can shred man coverages?
I guess he's just, Lawrence, one of these coaches who views the football world in the lens of we do what we do. Now, I do feel like in the game yesterday, Detroit showed Mitch more blended coverages than what they normally have over the last few years. But when you think about Mitch's career, his biggest moments have come against Detroit, man. And it's just, you can go all the way back to his rookie season when he was in Detroit. And there was the second half of that game was the first time, you know, on this station and at other outlets, as soon as they drafted the kid, like, I don't know, this ain't the dude. I disagree with that evaluation. But then that Detroit game, his rookie year, was the first time where they were down by a couple of scores, and they just said, all right, let's go out here and let him cut it loose a little bit. And he had some really impressive passes in that second half, and I've talked to you about it before, and it's the first time I was like, oh, all right, maybe there's something here. There's some moldable clay that I was impressed with from what I saw. And that's continued to, for whatever reason, like Leonard Floyd versus Green Bay. There's just certain matchups that we see over the years that tend to favor players, that we tend to see guys at their best. And Matt Patricia playing man coverage, that's certainly where he had his most success yesterday. But because the pass protection held up so well throughout the game, because there were a couple of drops in the game, he had one that would have been a really difficult catch from Anthony Miller early in the game where a defender made a nice play on it. We weren't sure whether it was a catch and fumble or what happened. Then there was the one pretty obvious drop that Allen Robinson had on the third down drive as he started getting to the latter stages of the game. But overall, guys caught the ball well. The O-line protected superbly. The run lanes were pretty open consistently for David Montgomery. So you had a run game. You had Mitch in the pocket moving over and over again. Matt Nagy calling the game in a manner that we anticipate. So all those things coming together in what I thought was certainly not Mitch's best game of the season. Now, statistically, it was, without a doubt. But as far as just his comfort, the quickness of his read, the rhythm that he threw the ball in, I thought he was good. I think I've seen Mitch more consistently doing things in rhythm this season than what we saw yesterday. But all those things around him and his teammates playing at a higher level, I just thought even with Detroit showing him more coverage looks than they have under Patricia normally, he didn't necessarily look in rhythm all the time. He looked hesitant every once in a while, but it ended up turning out to be a high-level performance because guys around Mitch did their job, essentially.
Talking with Anthony Heron, one of our experts here at The Score. Follow him on Twitter, at Big Ant Heron. After the game, Matt Nagy was saying, oh, you know, the 10 was special today, and he kept heaping the praise on him, and the lady doth protest too much sometimes when it comes to their praise of Mitchell Trubisky. What was real? What were tangible things that you saw that you think have a possibility of carrying over to other games for Trubisky?
Well, I think we're at a point now where, and, you know, I try to be, as you know, as objective about these things as I can. But I think even the folks who have a tendency to be perhaps more mocking or more anti-Mitch in their dialogue about him, I think it's something where folks can't ignore at this point, where there does seem to be beyond just an observation of, well, okay, when they go hurry up, he's more comfortable. But I think we've seen a pattern now where late in games and in, you know, pseudo crunch time type of moments, he does seem to play beyond his standard productivity throughout the game. We've seen a number of times here, again, even going back to his rookie season, and with reviewing all these things, at least I try to view them in a number of prisms that put together, you know, little puzzle pieces that kind of put together the entire picture for it. I think even going back to his rookie year, where there's a pass against the Baltimore Ravens, where he had only attempted, I don't know, whatever, like 15 passes in the game, but it came down to the fourth quarter where they needed some big pass plays. He had a great touchdown pass that he threw. I think it was maybe like DeAndre Sims or something like that. And then later in the game, to ice the game, he had a big pass play that he had to complete. And even in that moment, that was the first example where I said, here's a glimpse of a guy who's willing to make some plays late in games. And, of course, we go back to last season, a couple of times during the regular season, playoff game against Philly. We've seen several times during this regular season where Mitch has played his best late in fourth quarter. The last time the Bears are going to have the ball, he leads them on a drive. The difference yesterday was that that drive didn't culminate in a makeable field goal attempt. That drive culminated in a touchdown pass. And it was a great read. It was getting through his progression. And then there's David Montgomery, young running back who they drafted for the skill sets that he displayed on that final drive. After having a nice game running the football, here, let's route a guy up. Let's get you out of the backfield, make some plays there. And Mitch, on third and four, and then later on in the drive, third and five, dropping dimes to Anthony Miller. We do, on our post-game show, Laura, it's a word of the day at the end of the show. My word was impact, because we saw throughout the game where it was a number of these younger, who the Bears hope will be emerging talents, getting the job done. They paid Cody Whitehair a bunch of money. James Daniels is a talented young guard. They blocked the run really well, man. They had some combo blocks where they were consistently moving guys off the ball. You saw Anthony Miller. We've seen Anthony Miller emerging more and more here over a few weeks now. But he's still running the wrong route sometimes. There's no doubt about that. But he's in the right spot more frequently than he was earlier in the season. And he's been catching the ball lately, where he's been one of the culprits in some of these drops. And specifically with Mitch, man, those passes that he hit, you know, one of them being to Horsted, the touchdown pass. And on that last drive, the third and four to Miller, the third and five deep ball to Miller, where Mitch struggles at times just from a sheer accuracy standpoint is throw that I define as firm with an arc, where you have to put some velocity on it, but you still need to get it over a defender who's between you and your receiver. And Mitch had several passes, and especially in those moments, and Nagy went to the podium afterwards and was even discussing that those passes aren't just where you got to use some arm strength to lace it in there with some accuracy. There's some precision to those passes that Mitch was able to hit to Horsted and to Anthony Miller, because you have a body between you and the receiver. And he was able to make those, man, in moments where it had to happen for the Chicago Bears. He got that done. So there were some special moments, no doubt, that Mitch had in the game yesterday. Overall, it just wasn't the most comfortable I've seen him look this season, because for me, grading the individual player, the individual performance, and then, of course, factoring in the big picture, does he play well enough to lift everyone else up around him? Is Mitch a guy yet who can thrive despite other performances around him lacking? No. But to me, Mitch is a guy where when the coach calls the game well, in a well-meaning a way that suits his skill set and what he's good at, like Matt Nagy's done here in recent weeks. And then if the teammates catch the ball and protect him, Mitch is a guy who can play at a high level. And so that's, to me, what yesterday encompassed. He did have some special moments. I don't think just grading it out snap by snap that it was the most comfortable he's looked throughout a game. I think it's a quality sign, though, Lawrence, that he could play at that level. He could put up those numbers in a game where I don't believe he looked his most comfortable, but he still was able to essentially thrive beyond that.
You ever deal with a quick quarterback change when you were playing, whether at Iowa or in the pros? Because I know that you don't have a lot of time to prepare. You've got, 72 hours or whatever to get ready, and then all of a sudden you hear that David Blau is going to be starting. That being said, that kid was impressive. I saw him sliding protections, recognizing blitzes, recognizing coverages, hitting guys on double moves. That's pretty impressive for a guy who is a third-string quarterback. And I know that you pay real close attention to the Big Ten. I was blown away by his level of preparation and accuracy in yesterday's game against a great defense in the Bears.
I thought David Blau was really impressive. I think that one thing that really, of course, got him going was hitting that first double move to Galladay early in the game on Prince. And part of that was what appeared to be a miscommunication in the Bears' secondary. But then as aggressive as Prince tends to be off the line, he wants to get his hands on receivers. And so when that shows up and you got a talented guy like Galladay where you got to bite on a certain portion of the route that he can take you deep, then we saw David Blau make them pay for that. And David Blau won't be the most talented quarterback that the Bears face this season. There's no doubt about that. But what I wasn't surprised by at all after covering him in his time at Purdue was the fact that he was willing to take those shot plays. He was willing to throw the ball deep and do it, with little regard for his body, for the pass protection. He's a guy with toughness in his DNA. We've seen that over and over again. Now, overall, he was a guy making his first start who, he probably really didn't know until very late in the week that he was going to legitimately be the starter over Driscoll. So I think, and even in coaching the game, I've had those moments where if you have a certain guy on your roster who doesn't have to think throughout the week in preparation for that and just mentally kind of be in that zone of him being the man, there's something to be said for just being thrust into the moment late and not necessarily having to, having to have all the mental gymnastics of prepping yourself for the pressure that's going to come with the moment. I think that's what we see sometimes in younger football players. David Blau, I did see throughout the game, though, where he got more hesitant, especially as the pass rush improved from Chicago. And the Bears didn't even have to necessarily go away from man to get him to start patting the ball. So some of the big plays that he hit were when the Bears ran man coverage and when aggressive defensive backs been on a double move. So those were the really chunk plays that he hit. So he started off pretty hot early. Things did taper off. There was kind of a middle chunk of the game where they really had him under wraps. But he had a couple of really nice deep balls early that were essentially he didn't necessarily even have to read those. You're just setting up a double move where a quarterback doesn't have to think. It's just, can the protection hold up long enough for him to throw this one ball? And if it's not there, then a lot of times he's just coached to throw it out of bounds. The other routes in those progressions a lot of times are just to draw coverage away from the double move you really want a young QB to hit. So I thought it was a really nice game plan for Detroit. They did enough in running the football at Chicago with Bo Scarborough, and they set up David Blau with some pocket movement to try to get him away from that pass rush, and then with some double moves to get him comfortable and in rhythm, and Chicago bit. And even when they didn't bite, you had Kenny Galladay out there just making plays. But I think overall, it was an impressive performance for a young quarterback. I don't yet look at it and say, all right, that's a harbinger of things to come because David Blau is going to be a star in this league. But I thought the way they set it up, and Darrell Bevell's been at this level for a long time, he put a nice game plan together for a quarterback who could make the adjustments on the fly. They did a nice job with it.
It's a Built for Tough Bears Monday on a Friday. We're talking Bears with Anthony Heron. Follow him on Twitter at Big Ant Heron. What are you allowing yourself to think about now that the Bears are 6-6?
Well, it was needed between the Bears now being 6-6, the Cowboys tapering back. That's, of course, their next opponent. So now the Bears find themselves in a position where they can continue to legitimately think playoffs. And if they're going to think playoffs and it's mathematically a possibility, then that's a great position for them to be in. Now, if they get the next one next Thursday, then that's huge. They're still, because they lost to the Rams, likely going to be behind the eight ball because they lost to the Eagles. Now, right now, they hold the tiebreaker over the Eagles because of their conference record. So that's something that could end up looming for them down the season if they end up with the same record. But if they really go on a run here, which I don't necessarily look at yesterday's performance against Detroit as one that will necessarily allow them to go on said run. But if they build off of that and continue to perform better against higher-level competition, because that's just Detroit wasn't higher-level competition. They got a couple of nice defensive backs. They had a depleted defensive front, so they ran the ball better. Linebacker position, not great. Part of them running the ball and throwing the ball well. And then what they did defensively, like we just got done talking about with David Blau, you're giving up strike plays on a defense that doesn't normally give up the explosive pass. And there was an image, Lawrence, that I put on Twitter on the very first touchdown pass that David Blau threw to Kenny Galladay, where you literally, and it's happened throughout the season, I just felt like it was worth posting the image on Twitter, where you literally have Khalil Mack being triple-teamed, three players assigned in their pass protection. One's the tight end who widens him out before he releases on his route. Then you have the other running back who's coming in there to pay attention to him while the offensive tackle is there blocking him as well. You have three people assigned to block Khalil Mack, literally everyone else. There's four of the rushers, so the Bears brought five. The other four guys were all one-on-one. No one got anywhere near David Blau while three people were assigned to block Khalil Mack. He got it. Big touchdown pass. Now the Lions are off and running. That has to be an area of improvement, and the problem is I just don't know where it's coming from because we've seen enough of Leonard Floyd to know that his pass rush will be inconsistent. It's gotten better in recent weeks, then it disappeared again yesterday, and the other players up front are who they are. Roy Robertson-Harris is, you know, basically a replacement-level player, as is Nick Williams. So it's only fair, I guess, to expect so much because we've gotten to see these guys play for a while now, but somewhere, somehow, they need to find a way to manufacture more. But I believe Roquan Smith and Nick Kwiatkowski situationally are what have aided them in manufacturing more pass rush. So to me, the Bears defense certainly isn't my chief concern, but overall, with some of the offenses that are coming up and the quarterbacks that they're going to face coming up here, it's going to be more of a problem if all they got to do is assign three guys to Khalil Mack and not worry about anyone else getting home on a pass rush.
I thought about Akiem Hicks a lot yesterday because of, you know, Blau, he's 6'1", and I kept thinking if there was pressure up the middle on him, and that's where we saw Roquan Smith get the sacks, if there's pressure up the middle on him, if he didn't have a place to climb the pocket, would he have been as effective as he was? And now with this win, you know, you're a week away. You're a win away from maybe getting Akiem Hicks back to your defensive line. That would be a real spark if he's healthy enough to be himself, to have him for the last three games of the season.
And I had a teammate in Detroit, a guy named Luther Ellis, who was a Pro Bowl defensive tackle. A guy of a similar level player to Akiem Hicks. Like, not a Hall of Fame talent, but a guy who's obviously currently one of the best in the business. And Luther actually got to a point, he's a big defensive tackle, but really mobile as well. Similar stature to Akiem Hicks, and in a similar fashion was sort of the emotional beacon for our Lions defense, who just as a big guy went out there and played with this big life force and made a lot of noise on the field, and guys kind of galvanized around the tenor that he played with. And Luther actually had a point where he tore he essentially hyperextended his elbow, was probably the simplest way to describe it. He didn't completely dislocate it, but he had to brace up the elbow on one of his arms, and he essentially went out there playing one-handed, and he did that for over a month during the season after he missed a little time and came back. And for me, just from a personal experience standpoint, in watching what Luther was doing, and he definitely wasn't the standard Luther Ellis when he was on the field, but the teammates still got something out of Luther being out there on defense and not necessarily being himself physically, but still being himself emotionally. Still being himself mentally, and what we got out of seeing him do that. So as long as Akiem Hicks can come back and he's not at a level where he's just giving up big plays and getting rolled out of there in the run phase, and perhaps, you know, if he's not able to hit blocks, because he's probably not going to be able to hit blocks effectively with that off elbow because the arm just won't be as strong. But if he can at least do enough just to not allow three offensive linemen releasing up to the second level, just P-Kettle and Nick Witkowski and Roquan Smith. Just be a guy out there physically that can grade out okay, but then still be yourself emotionally and provide that leadership. I think the Bears defense will still get a lot out of Akeem Hicks if he can return to the field in a safe manner. If he can't, then certainly, of course, he's better off staying on the sidelines until he can get healthy enough to do it. But I think part of what we saw earlier this week with him getting kind of feisty with Waddle, or part of what we heard, I think that, to me, I take it as an example of, yeah, he had an overreaction in the moment, I think, but I think it's an example of just how hungry he is to be on the field, how frustrated he is not being out there with his teammates. And so I do think that he's going to do everything he can to be back out there. And if he does, and he can at least kind of just get by physically, I do think the defense will benefit from it.
Anthony, as always, great analysis. Have a safe traveling weekend this weekend, and I'll see you back on campus next week.
All right, looking forward to it, Aloha.
That is Anthony Heron. Follow him on Twitter, at Big Ant Heron. He's got to get out of here and get out of town because he's got to call some football this weekend because he's got a million jobs. I want to talk a little bit more about the Akeem Hicks thing. We'll take a break and discuss that next here on The Score.
Where are you in? Akeem Hicks can return to practice this week, can he not?
Yes, he can.
Where are you guys with that?
Well, I hope that's what our focus is. We're hoping that he's able to come back this week and start practicing. So that's kind of the goal.
Physically, can he get through a practice?
That I don't know. Yeah. You know, yeah, we'll I guess we'll see.
That was Matt Nagy talking with Patrick Finley of the Sun-Times about Akeem Hicks. Here's the deal. Akeem Hicks can't practice until Sunday because week 13 isn't over yet. Because the Bears started week 13 with their Thursday morning game. So he can start practicing if he's healthy enough. And the indications are that he's at least going to try to see what he can do starting on Sunday. Then he has a week to ramp himself up. He cannot play in the game against the Cowboys on Thursday night. But after that, he is eligible to come off injured reserve return the week that the Bears play the Packers. So week 15, that would be game week 15 of the NFL season. And him coming back would be significant. Even in the game planning stages of this, he might not be, as Anthony was saying in our last segment, he might not be the same player that he was at the beginning of the year. And he hadn't been injured really at all throughout his time with being with the Bears. But just the fact that you have to at least allocate some resources to him. The Bears haven't gotten enough from the rest of the pass rushers, except for Nick Williams, who was second in sacks after the sack fumble on Sunday to Khalil Mack. And the guys in the middle of a line are exactly what you're supposed to do. That's where you need guys to step up, because ideally they're being single blocked and they should win those battles. And at least with Akeem being available, offensive coordinators will have to go, okay, we have to at least see if he's any good. And if he's any good, then we're probably going to have to double team him, which takes some pressure off of Mac, which then allows Mac to be Mac and not be doubled and triple team. It's been disappointing that the other guys haven't won. It's disappointing that Leonard Floyd, although if we are looking for a game where Leonard Floyd is going to get loose, Packers game.
He loves those Packers.
Because I want to say about half of his career sacks are against the Packers.
Yeah, I routinely forget Leonard Floyd is on the team.
It's
routinely.
With a guy that's that physically gifted, you would like to see him be more involved in things. But Akeem coming back to me is a big deal. Big deal. So we'll see how it ends up going. I him being back to me, I think changes. That's why you have to win. Win Thursday. Because if you lose Thursday, Akeem, we appreciate it. Get healthy for next year. But if you win, can you, big fella, can you get ready? for next Sunday against the Packers? Because we would really, really appreciate it if you could. No problem. Bottom of the hour is being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. If you want to sign a one-day contract with the Chicago Wolves and earn a $5,000 signing bonus, visit ChicagoWolves.com for details. Then visit the Sprint store in Arlington Heights between 1 and 3 p.m. December 14th for your chance to win. By the way, we're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. Visit your local Hyundai dealer and test drive the Hyundai Palisade today. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Tony wants to say some stuff. Because today is his last day here at the Score before he moves on to his new big job with his big money. He's going to be taking me to Gibson's from now on.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're not going to return the favor? Oh, I see how
it
is.
I haven't made it yet.
I see how it is.
I haven't made it yet. Once I make it, that'll be the first thing that I do.
Is stingy.
Take Lawrence.
Just stingy. That's all. Unbelievable. Over here stingy.
You know, you open a guy up to,
I'm just
to,
happy
to
I
new
get
experiences.
I get to go to the doctors now.
Yes.
That's where I'm at.
We're very happy that you can go see a doctor or a dentist or maybe get glasses because I think you might need those.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are important. That's an important step in life. But we're going to let Tony have his say after we come back after a quick timeout. I'm Lawrence Holmes. You're listening to The Score.
You know, brother.
When I'm done with the microphone today, it is going to be Mark Brody and Will Perdue. I mean, I see Will walking out there. I'm like, he's going to host the whole show. Will's got a lot of talents, man. He's not just the guy that talks basketball, even though he talks basketball for a living. He's got a lot of different passions, very interesting guy. So make sure that you stick around. For those of you who have been with the show since we started, and those of you who are just kind of jumping in now, the show started the first day of the baseball season when I was told that we were going to move the show from the nighttime show to noon to 2, and I had to find someone who was going to help me with this because it was a little bit of a difference in the way the day was broken up here at the Score. So the shows were already set with their executive producers, and if you're producing one show, it's hard to produce another show. And I ask my producers to do a lot. Like, I ask them to do a lot of sound. We use a ton of sound. We try really hard to make it so that you just have to listen. And in times when people want to text or call in, we do that. But we try to make it so that you don't have to. So Tony was my intern a long time ago. When he got here at the Score, he worked on my show at night. And I've never told him this, but when Joe got promoted, when Joe Ostrowski got promoted to full-time on air, I was looking for an executive producer. So there was a whole interview process that went on, and Herbie ended up winning that job. But we interviewed a bunch of producers here, and after Tony's interview, he came in, he had a binder, he had a whole bunch of different ideas. Mitch and I were like, oh, Tony's ready for the next thing. Like, he's at a point now where he's ready to take control of a show. And then we saw him start to really help out on the digital side and create cool podcasts, and the award-winning in the case of him and Julie DeCaro and what they did with their Behind the Headlines podcast. Then on top of that, he created the No Zones podcast where he would talk about Bulls. Like, he worked not just here in the studio, which is usually the easiest thing to do, but he got himself a credential and started covering Bulls games and made himself bigger because he was actually getting information from the sources and not just taking it in from watching it on TV. He got out there. People got to see his face. And so when I was looking for an EP, he was high on the list of choices and got him. You know, Mitch was like, okay, go forward. Let Tony take the show. And it was one of those things where I know now that I'm in the back half of what our desired listening demo is, because I'm 44. I'm old now. I'm not the young guy at the Score anymore. I'm in the middle now and starting to look like one of the old guys here at the station. But I'm not quite yet. But I did realize that my show needed someone to launch it, someone younger who had a different perspective than what I did. And Tony's very different in the way that he looks at sports radio, the way that he looks at producing a show. He's got a lot of good elements of the best producers that I've worked with. He's got a lot of Chris Tannehill in him, and that is a high compliment because you shouldn't put anyone's name next to Chris Tannehill's name because he's so good. But Tony's got some of that with his creativity as a producer on the production side. He has some of the no-nonsense of Joe Ostrowski under him that he understands, like, there are things that the shows should do and there are things that the shows shouldn't do. He has the kind of creative way that Herb Lawrence brings a take to the air and just drops it there and let everyone else. So he's taken from a lot of the producers that he worked with and has turned himself into an incredible producer. Tony's going to go work for NBC Sports Chicago. He is going to be someone that's going to give some vision to the podcasting that goes on over there. The great thing for me is that I get to still work with him because I work over there as well. The great thing for NBC Sports Chicago is that they have someone who I think is a star in the making, someone who I think has the talent to run a content factory. I've talked about this a couple times with people around here. Tony's going to be in charge of something. Like, it's not just, I mean, I like being talent. I mean, I guess technically I could be, I do have a company, but Tony's going to actually be in charge of stuff. And I think it's wonderful from his time that he came in here as a student to now where he is. What he has done has been extremely impressive, and I'm so proud of him. So proud. The way that he took care of this show as it launched, and he got us to where we needed to be. All the cool stuff that we did with Joe Madden, that was Tony's idea. That wasn't mine. That was Tony's. Tony said, let's have some fun with Joe and open it up. And it opened up a creative lane for us to go down and make the Joe Madden experience each week a lot of fun for everyone who listened to it. And I think Joe became kind of a friend to this show. And his contribution to it in the infancy of it, I can't overstate how important that was for Joe to be a part of the show. It's possible that that would have happened without Tony, but Tony is the one that put all of that stuff in motion. He is an extremely talented broadcaster and a great person. And he lives that every day that I see him. He is a testament to how well he was raised by his family. And he carries that with him wherever he is in public. The Gill family should be extremely proud of the man that you are turning into, as I am proud of the producer and the man that you are turning into. It will be incredibly sad for Tony to not be in the hallways here at the Score, but I don't know if there's anyone that we're all as universally happy is getting ready to, that you're getting ready to go do this thing. That it's basically a high five from everyone here, from Mitch, Shane, all the producers that you've worked with, Herbie, Tanny, Joe, me, Roki, even though she's somewhere hiding in Boston right now. All of the people that you've worked with and all the things that you've done to make this show good and this station better. Like, when people heard that you were getting the gig, they were like, damn, congratulations, Tony. You deserve it. And I want you to remember that you deserve it. No imposter syndrome stuff here. You earn this and you deserve it. And now you get to go on and be great. So I'm going to stop talking, because if I keep talking, then I'm going to start crying. So I'm going to stop talking and let Tony speak for himself now that I've spoken about him for a few minutes.
thanks, Lawrence, for, you know, your kind words. I never thought that, you know, this day will come, especially so soon. I tell everybody that has asked me about, you know, my feelings toward leaving. It's weird because this was the goal. When I first wanted to get into broadcasting, I knew from the jump, I knew where I wanted to work. And I was blessed enough to get that opportunity right out of school. And I loved every day of it. The overnights, the coming in after, you know, working the overnights to fill in for somebody. Like, I didn't mind any of it. I didn't mind any shift that I got. Because I just love this place so much. I grew up, my father was a big Score fan, and we'd listen to it every day in the car. And I grew up on the Score. I'm a Score kid. And it's been one of the best experiences of my life so far. I appreciate everybody that has fed into me, that has put time into me to be what I am today. You mentioned a lot of them. Starting off with my teachers at IMS, Devontae Stone, who is down the hall, was my very first teacher that introduced me to broadcasting. To all my friends that I got there. And then, you know, Roki and James Woodard. People forget about him. James Woodard was a great producer. We all got hired at the same time. To Z-Pac and Withers and Rick Camp, who trained me when I first got here. And then, you know, working with Joe and Herbie and Chris Tannehill, Matt Abatacola, Joe Dredge, everybody that has spent time with me, Chris Ranji, that has allowed me to be myself and gave me advice to be where I am today. Thank you. I really appreciate all of you. To my family, obviously, thank you for encouraging me and encouraging me to stick with it when it got hard. I appreciate you and I love you all. To the listeners who, you know, allowed me to be myself and enjoyed me, and if I made your day a little bit better, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to do that, and thank you for remembering me as a Score guy. And I know I'm missing, you know, a lot of people. Brendan McCaffrey, Mitch Rosen.
Goff.
Jason Goff, thank you. All those guys that really took their time with me, even when I was making mistakes, and still encouraged me, thank you. And to you, Lawrence, thank you. You gave me the opportunity. When I first introduced myself when I was an intern, I said, Lawrence, I love you. I love your show, and I want to intern for you, because I don't think technically they were night interns. But I managed to stay afterwards because I just love what Lawrence was doing on his show. And you invited me in, and you taught me, and you allowed me to grow. And then you made me your executive producer on a daytime show. And that's something I'll never, ever forget. And I'll be forever grateful for that opportunity. Thank you, Lawrence. And thank you, 670 The Score.
Tony Gill is about to go conquer the world. And we couldn't be happier for him. He's an incredible individual. Really incredible. Back after this.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.